30 years ago, President Reagan nominated Anthony Kennedy to the Supreme Court. The framers established that the Constitution is designed to secure the blessings of liberty. Justice Kennedy devoted his career to securing liberty. I am deeply honored to be nominated to fill his seat on the Supreme Court.
Last night, President Trump nominated Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. In the coming weeks, Kavanaugh is expected to face a difficult confirmation in the Senate. He's also one of the 25 judges handpicked by a group called the Federalist Society. And that's where we begin today.
Good morning. Such an obedient crowd. Thank you very much.
Every November, conservative and libertarian lawyers gather at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. for the Federalist Society's annual convention.
And I am very pleased that such a large and distinguished audience has joined us for this, the Federalist Society's 35th anniversary National Lawyers Convention.
That's Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society's 2017 gathering.
The dinner, the annual dinner this evening, will be a record breaker in terms of numbers of people attending. I'm also happy to report that our registration numbers for the convention this year exceed last year's numbers by a wide margin, and last year was a very good year.
The Federalist Society is made up of 60,000 practicing attorneys and more than 10,000 law students at more than 200 schools across the country. And they follow judges throughout their careers to make sure they're issuing conservative decisions and strict interpretations of the Constitution, including Brett Kavanaugh.
My judicial philosophy is straightforward. A judge must be independent and must interpret the law, not make the law. A judge must interpret statutes as written, and a judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent.
So this nomination, it means it's been a very good year for the Federalist Society, and they've been at this for a very long time. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. So let's get some answers. Michael Avery is a professor emeritus at Suffolk University Law School and author of The Federalist Society, How Conservatives Took the Law Back from Liberals. Professor Avery, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's start with Kavanaugh himself. Why this candidate?
Well, Kavanaugh has been a member of the conservative establishment, legal establishment in Washington for quite some time. He worked for President George W. Bush. He worked for Ken Starr. In fact, he picked judges for President George W. Bush for the years he was in the White House before he himself was appointed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So he has impeccable conservative credentials, and he is one of the pool of people that the Federalist Society has developed just to stand in line to get positions such as this.
Let's talk a little bit about the society, the Federalist Society's organization. What are their principles? Who funds this organization?
The Society is funded by very wealthy conservative philanthropists. Initially, they were funded by the John M. Olin Foundation and the Sarah Scaife Foundation. Later along came the Koch brothers and then many other conservative philanthropists. And the interesting thing about their funding is that almost all their money comes in the form of unrestricted funds. In other words, unlike liberal philanthropists who require organizations to say exactly what they're going to do with the money, these conservatives give money to the Federalist Society just to build up the society so it can pursue its aims.
Is there a liberal version of the Federalist Society?
Well, there's something called the American Constitution Society, which was founded after the Federalist Society and in opposition to it, but it's much smaller. It doesn't have the same amount of money. It doesn't have access to the network of other conservative groups that the Federalist Society has, and it doesn't have the same clout in Washington that the Federalist Society has.
What kind of qualifications? I mean, we're sort of speaking broadly here about conservative values, but what exactly was the Federalist Society looking for in its court nominees and when it put together this list of 25 potential nominees?
Well, the Federalist Society says that they simply interpret the Constitution the way it was written, but in fact, they have several core beliefs that are very important to them. Probably the most important is the primacy of private property. They think that private property is the single most important value protected by the Constitution, and therefore they oppose all sorts of government regulation, taking private property for public use, environmental regulations, anything that would interfere with what they perceive to be the God-given right of rich people to do whatever they want with their own property. They've also been very strong against affirmative action. They don't believe that race should be taken into account in admissions to schools or in hiring, notwithstanding the long history of racism and oppression in this country. They don't think that that should be taken into account in today's world. They've been opposed to abortion rights for women. They've aligned themselves with the right-wing religious fundamentalists in terms of state support for religion. They limit access to courts for workers, consumers, and others to try to get justice if they've been taken advantage of by more powerful people in society. So across the board, they have this conservative view. And also in foreign policy, they are very much in favor of American exceptionalism, Trump's notion that it's America first and international agreements be damned is very much in line with Federalist Society thinking.
Now, I'm wondering if past presidents looked to the Federalist Society, when they were culling nominations for the court. And if so, has the Federalist Society sort of taken on a more important role over the past couple of decades than it had prior?
Absolutely. Well, the Federalist Society was founded by law students in the early 80s, and of course, Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980, and he came to Washington with Edwin Meese, who very early on appreciated the value of these young conservatives and gave them important positions in the White House and in the Justice Department, and eventually they played a role in helping select judges during the Reagan administration. Subsequently, for both Bushes, both George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, the Federalist Society members were actually holding positions in the White House, and Judge Kavanaugh held one of those positions for George W. Bush, picking judges. What the Federalist Society has done is to create a multi-lane highway, a network that extends from the law schools up through the law firms, clerkships for judges, positions in the Department of Justice. Eventually, their people got appointed to the bench in the district courts, the courts of appeals, and ultimately the Supreme Court. So Kavanaugh is only one of many fish swimming in this large pond that the Federalist Society has created, now three generations of conservative lawyers that they have developed and nurtured to be in positions of power.
In the aftermath of President Trump's SCOTUS nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, we're talking with Professor Michael Avery about how the Federalist Society works and who the group has influence over. I'm wondering, Professor, if you can tell us a little bit about someone named Leonard Leo. He's the executive vice president of the society, and he was influential in Trump's selection of Neil Gorsuch and, of course, Kavanaugh.
Leonard Leo is an extremely powerful person in Washington, D.C. He's a very conservative person. He's been with the Federalist Society his whole career, and he has access to tens of millions of dollars in funding to use to promote his agenda. The Federalist Society budget is only about $14 million a year, which is substantial, but he has access to tens of millions more than that through the Judicial Crisis Network and other organizations that Leo plays a role in. He contributed or assisted in contributing $1 million to Trump's inauguration. $1 million is nothing to Leonard Leo. They spent $17 million, the Judicial Crisis Network spent $17 million opposing Merrick Garland's nomination by President Obama to the Supreme Court. And they now intend to spend millions in the swing states in support of Judge Kavanaugh's nomination. So Leo has his finger on the lever of power. And he himself is very conservative, and he uses this in a variety of ways to promote his agenda and the Federalist Society agenda.
We know they're doing that at the public level, but what about the private, behind the scenes, the informal networks?
Well, these networks are huge. When George W. Bush was president, appointments of young lawyers to the Department of Justice were made on a litmus test basis, so that if you had the Federalist Society on your resume, you got the job. If you had American Constitution Society on your resume, you didn't. And then these lawyers work in the DOJ. They get credentialed there or in the White House or in other government agencies. Then they become partners in the big corporate law firms. Some of them go on the bench, and they filter throughout the entire power structure that affects law and policy in the United States.
Michael Avery is a professor emeritus at Suffolk University Law School and author of The Federalist Society: How Conservatives Took the Law Back from Liberals. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Lev. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. I'm just wondering, where is justice in all of this? The judges have become so political. They arbitrarily decide cases, essentially. And so there is simply no justice in the justice system. And judges are not preoccupied with justice at all. And if they were, they would have followed the due process. And then it wouldn't have mattered whether judges are conservative or liberal. The decisions would be the same.
William in Stoughton, Massachusetts, I think that the country needs to answer this question. Should judges be able to serve out life terms? Someone with like Ruth Bader Ginsburg at 85 years old, where the court itself is suffering because they're not able to decide cases as quickly as they should be. That's not the way the Supreme Court was fashioned to run. It was fashioned to run 150, 60 cases a year and to do the people's work.
We want to know what you think, listeners. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, or German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel, Babbel.com.
And Progressive Insurance, offering Snapshot, a device designed to reward safe drivers. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.